You are lost in the stars. Welcome back to Lost in the Stacks. This is our once a month adjunct podcast to the Labyrinth Library, wherein we talk about book related topics, reading related topics, things that aren't necessarily just one book, but which I think are interesting and I think we'd like to talk about. I hope to engage in a good conversation with everybody, so please feel free, after you listen to this, let me know what you think. What are your ideas? What are your thoughts? This is entirely about you, really, not just me. And to prove it, we are doing this month's episode from a listener suggestion. And this comes from Marissa in the U.S., and she wants to know, is young adult fiction something that adults should be reading too? Which is an excellent question. Of the books that I've reviewed so far, I think the following could be considered young adult. We've got A Series of Unfortunate Events, number one, The Bad Beginning, The Thief of Always, House of Stairs, Little Brother, The Green Futures of Tycho, and The Graveyard Book. You could also consider To Kill a Mockingbird and Watership Down. The former because the narrator is indeed a young adult, and the latter because, well, I read it in fourth grade, and it seemed to me like a book aimed more at young people than adults, even if it doesn't actually have any young adult characters. So I would say that my answer is yes, adults can read young adult fiction and call it a day. But we all know that isn't going to happen. That is pretty much what defines a young adult novel, actually, is a protagonist and a supporting cast who are in their teens, roughly, in a book that is written with readers of that age in mind. Now, according to Wikipedia, bless its heart, the young adult genre was defined in the beginning of the 19th century by a British writer named Sarah Trimmer as books for those between the ages of 14 and 20. Under 14, of course, was children's literature, and over 20 was the gray drudgery of adulthood. But in that middle ground, a good century or so before the concept of the teenager settled into what we know it to be today, people were already thinking about what these young people could read. And that timeline is very important. The modern teenager wasn't really invented until the 1920s, and they didn't become an economic force to be reckoned with until the baby boomers got their very first armpit hairs and zits in the 50s and 60s. Before that, there were simply books that appealed to young people, without being specifically targeted at them by authors and publishers. People like Robert Louis Stevenson, Alexandre Dumas, Mark Twain, Johannes Spyri, Louisa May Alcott, and Rudyard Kipling, if you asked them, would never have identified themselves as young adult authors. But the books they wrote, Treasure Island, The Count of Monte Cristo, The Adventures of Huckleberry Finn, Heidi, Little Women, and The Jungle Book, they all appeared to young people of their day, and they still do. Now later, we get books like The Secret Garden, and Johnny Tremaine, and Anne of Green Gables, My Friend Flicka, which were starting to explore the potential of the young adult market without still being young adult books. During this time, the Newbery Medal was established to reward excellence in American literature for children, and once teenagers started to become an economic resource, publishers started publishing books specifically with them in mind. The American Library Association established their Young Adult Services Division in 1957, and the ball started rolling from there. Currently, if my math is right, young adult fiction sales are a little bit over $3 billion, spurred in recent years by explosively popular series like Harry Potter and Twilight. Despite what you may have heard, those damn kids today do like to read, and a lot of them have ready cash to spend. The books that they read generally feature characters their own age going through the same kinds of existential troubles that the reader is probably going through. This ranges from anything from the angst of teen love to issues involving parents or drugs or depression and suicide, as well as just the thirst for adventure, the meaning of life and establishing identity, rebelling against the dominance of adults, and just generally getting along in the madness that is teenagerhood. Young people not only develop the reading habit early, but also the knowledge that they are not alone. After all, there is no more classic teenage reaction to stress than, "Nobody understands what I'm going through." Well, yes, somebody does. And what's more, reading young adult literature helps teach kids about other kids who are unlike them. A teenager living in a small town in Arkansas, for example, might not get the chance to meet gay teens and discover they're actually human beings and not evil homo zombies. If he reads a book like Rainbow Boys, he might. A girl whose friend maybe have committed suicide might not be able to understand why a person would do such a thing, but a book like 13 Reasons Why might help her gain a little understanding. Reading about people who are other to you is no substitute for actually meeting and interacting with them, but it's good preparatory work for people who are about to leave their little hometowns for a wild and more diverse world. Now, that's great, you say, but what does this have to do with the adult reader? If the young people are reading books aimed at them, marketed towards them, and addressing their issues, why should I, an adult reader, bother to read them? After all, I managed to make it to 30 years old, and I've pretty much managed to lick all those teenage insecurities and power struggles, or at least most of them. What more can young adult fiction do for me? Well, that's a fine question. Thank you for asking. There are plenty of people who think that young adult fiction has something to offer them, sometimes reading it to the exclusion of mainstream adult literature. Over on Forever Young Adult, which is a community blog for adult fans of young adult reading, there's a group of people who are dedicated to what they call yangelism. You kind of have to see it spelled out for it to work, but yangelism, which is the active and passionate promotion of reading young adult literature to both youths and adults. And while I can certainly understand their passion, you know, see last month's episode, I always do feel a little bit wary when somebody identifies themselves by the specific type of book they read, whether it's science fiction or fantasy, mystery, romance, or, God forbid, ghost-written conservative diatribes with people like Bill O'Reilly on the cover. I believe, personally, in a varied and a wide-ranging diet of books, covering every genre and every classification you can get your hands on. While young adult does cover a great many topics and genres, I would still caution against letting yourself get stuck in a literary ghetto, but that's just me. For lots of other people, young adult satisfies a very specific reading need. Forever Young Adult is a busy and active blog addressing the many topics in which its readers are interested, whether the books have believable characters, which is known as the BFF factor, or whether the book is swoon-worthy. Any of you who know me probably know that I'm probably not going to become an active member of that blog. I cannot, in good conscience, use the word swoon-worthy to discuss a book. But again, that's just me. There's also a section of the site that's devoted to defending their statuses as adults who read books that were written for teenagers. For example, there's an essay by one Rachel Kay, where she lambastes adult literature as a waste of time, basically being nothing more than angsty adults who have some kind of life-altering experience, you know, the death of a loved one, cancer, alcoholism, cancer, an affair, cancer, and then they moan about it for 300 pages while nothing of interest happened. She specifically mentions the new book by Jonathan Franzen that's been making the rounds, and while I haven't read it yet, the advanced press makes it sound just as unbearable as she makes it sound. And I've talked to other people who are slogging their way through this book, and so far nobody I've talked to seems to like it. But it's one of those books that everybody's supposed to read, and I haven't figured that out either. And Ms. Kay does say that that is her touchstone to adult literature when she uses it as an example. And those are the books that she thinks people are saying she should be reading. And she really fails to see the value of that kind of literature in her life. Young adult fiction, on the other hand, is what she wants to read. Stories full of interesting characters who go through more positive crises and who change over the course of the story or over the series as a whole. Now, I think Ms. Kay is being a little bit unfair to adult literature as a whole in this kind of a broad-based and snarky assessment of the Franzen niche. But she is certainly welcome to decide what books it brings her happiness to read. And there's a community of like-minded people who are willing to back her up. For the adults at this site, for librarians who curate young adult collections, the publishers who put them out, and of course the authors who write them, there is real value in this kind of writing. And I think the core of it may be a grain of truth that can be found in Ms. Kay's tirade, if you look hard enough. And that grain is this. Adults are boring. Think about that for a sec. Most of us adults, we live fairly settled lives with very well-worn routines. We no longer go through this grand tapestry of emotions that we did in our youth. We've pretty much figured out who we are and what we want to be. We are trains on tracks. Our destinations are more or less set in steel, and that's how we like it. The only time a train, or the average adult life, is really interesting is when it derails. Teenagers, however, tend to lead more adventurous lives, both inner and outer lives. They still have no idea who they are or what they want to be. They're still learning about the world and how it works and what they think, and they're usually open to the idea that everything they know about life could be dead wrong. Their very bodies won't allow them a moment's rest, filling them with weird thoughts and impulses and emotions that they don't yet know how to handle. Those same bodies are also surprising them constantly with physical changes and abilities they never expected and certainly won't appreciate until they fade. So if adults are stately freight trains, teenagers are cars doing donuts in a snowy parking lot. The accidents they have are kind of scary at the time, but ultimately harmless. There's always the chance that, in the process of all that horsing around, they might actually learn how to drive. Now, my reading life began with books by none other than the modern queen of young adult literature, Judy Blume. I read Tales of a Fourth Grade Nothing and Superfudge, which were both about a boy dealing with being the older brother of a younger boy he really couldn't understand. Now, as much as I love my siblings now, back in the day, I could certainly identify with Peter Hatcher in those books, and Blume helped me understand a little bit how better to deal with the situation. Now, while I don't think it necessarily made me a better big brother, I'd have to ask the Sibs, and that's not the kind of thing we discuss, it at least planted the seeds within me, I think, to get along better with my brothers and sisters once I grew up and became a more rational adult. Yeah, they drove me nuts when I was young, but you know, Fudge drove Peter nuts, and Abel drove Cain nuts. I doubt there have been any set of siblings alive that haven't wanted, at least one time or another, to kill each other. Knowing then that my situation was not special might be what kept me from letting it dominate my relationships with them into my adulthood. Or not, I don't know. I'm sure there's a therapist out there who's got house payments to make who would love to figure this kind of thing out for me. As I get older, of course, I started drifting more towards the science fiction fantasy books of young adult fiction, with books like by William Sleater and Piers Anthony. Sleater did these dark science fiction works like The Green Futures of Tycho and House of Stairs and Interstellar Pig. All of these involved young people immersed in situations that they were utterly unprepared for, whether it's time travel or government psychological training or alien invasion. They barely survive by their own wits and their good luck. Piers Anthony did light-hearted, pun-filled fantasy about his Florida-shaped land of Xanth and its vaguely disturbing sexual overtones. Yeah, when I look back at the cover of the first Xanth book I bought, which was Heaven Sent, I notice it featured a mermaid, okay, and a naked teenage boy, all of them, of course, tastefully posed to avoid revealing naughty bits, on a boat made of a skeleton while this avuncular cloud leers on. Honestly, I wonder how I missed what was going on in so many ways. Regardless, they were part of my reading foundation, and to reread these books in my adult life gives me a brief look at who I once was. The nice thing is that I have yet to look at one of the books I loved and thought, ew, why on earth did I like that? But then again, I haven't reread the Xanth series in a while, so there is still time. And what's more, I can now more readily identify with the adults in the stories, who, while they don't always directly oppose the young protagonists, are usually obstacles in his or her progress. So I can kind of see the point of view of the government officials or the harsh teachers or the murderous future selves in a way that I couldn't back when I was a teenager. And at the same time, I remember why I liked those books and what it was that drove me to read them. Those heady days of youth came flooding back for a little while, making my humdrum adult life a little more interesting. It is a little bit dangerous, though. It would be all too easy to romanticize those days and remember them as being a whole lot better, or a whole lot worse, than they really were. You could just end up escaping into an imagined past, which keep you from addressing the issues that you face in the real world or the present. You know, it's all well and good to wonder whether Harry or Ron is ever going to hook up with Hermione, and whether Snape is really evil or just pretending to be, but if that starts to interfere with the life you're actually living, then maybe you need to give it a rest. The desire to relive your youth, or to live a youth that was better than yours, it's a pitfall that every adult has to watch out for, regardless of whether they read young adult fiction. But it does have its benefits. You can rekindle those feelings that come with having no control over your life, but learning how to go your own way. You can remember what it's like to meet someone who's so different from you that you literally cannot imagine how they got there. You can relive those feelings of young love that consumed you, those times of gray despair that tried to smother you, the excitements and the disappointments that came almost daily those days. And then when you close the book and you come back to the world in which you have no choice but to live, you can maybe bring some of that youthful energy back with you. In that fact, perhaps, lies the true benefit for adults who read young adult fiction. By reminding us of who we were, of the chances we used to take and the things we used to fear and the dramas that used to occupy our lives, we can take another look at the lives we're living now. These books are a reminder that the world is a lot more complicated than we see it, with our routines and our schedules and our jobs. They remind us that the world is populated with more kinds of people than the ones we see every day, day in and day out. They remind us of the thousand little challenges that life can throw at us at any given moment, and the fact that we've always been able to rise to meet them. They give us the great gift of perspective, the chance to re-envision the way we live the world and the reason to change it. If we can somehow combine that ignorant bravado of our youth with the wisdom that we have earned, we can make it worth it. So, long, long, long answer to a simple question. The too long didn't listen to the answer, of course, is yes, you can read adult fiction, and you should. Much like any genre, of course, there's going to be good adult fiction, young adult fiction, there's going to be bad young adult fiction. Everybody likes to point to Twilight as the bad young adult fiction. I have not read Twilight, so I cannot in good conscience say it is bad. Everybody else says it's bad, though, so it's really not tops on my list. But as with anything, choose it with care, and then read it, enjoy it, think about it, ponder it, just as you would any other book. And if there's a book out there that people all say you should be reading, be careful of that book. Like I said, I haven't heard good things about the Jonathan Franzen book from a lot of people whose opinions I respect. So let me give you, I've got two quotes that I looked up. The first one, I think, applies more to what we've talked about here, is by Marcus. These are two sort of classical quotes. The first one is by Marcus Tullius Cicero, who says, "As I approve of a youth that has something of the old man in him, so I am no less pleased with an old man that has something of the youth. He that follows this rule may be old in body, but can never be so in mind." That's a nice thought, you know? Maybe reading young adult fiction does keep you young in its way. The other one I stumbled across while I was looking for a quote, and I had to get it because a lot of people talk about these damn kids today and they have no respect. And when I was a kid, I was better and I read lots of books and I didn't play PlayStation all the time and these kids are all just wandering zombies. This is a quote from Hesiod, who was a poet in 700 BC. Okay, so 2,000 and change years ago. And Hesiod says, "I see no hope for the future of our people if they are dependent on frivolous youth of today. For certainly all youth are reckless beyond words. When I was young, we were taught to be discreet and respectful of elders, but the present youth are exceedingly disrespectful and impatient of restraint." So there you go. 2,700 years, nothing has changed. God bless humanity. All right, so that is it. I hope you enjoyed it. If you have thoughts on young adult literature, whether or not it is right for adults to read or good for adults to read, or even if you think it's good or not good for young adults to read, let me know. Leave a comment up on the blog or on Facebook or email or Twitter or any of these other ways you can get in touch with me. And if you have ideas for what we can talk about every month, please let me know. Before I got this suggestion from Marissa, I was working on a bit about the actual science of reading, which I think is fascinating, but I have a hard time making it fascinating. So that's one I've got in reserve. So if you have really good ideas, let me have them, and I will give you the credit. Congratulations. All right, well, thank you very much for listening again, and we'll be back at you next month. You have been listening to Lost in the Stacks, a monthly adjunct podcast to the Labyrinth Library Book Review Podcast, which can be found at thelablib.org. Leave a comment there, join our discussion on Facebook, or follow LabLib on Twitter. This podcast is covered by a Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, No Derivative License, which means you can feel free to share it, but please don't sell it or change it. The music is courtesy of Kevin MacLeod at www.incompetech.com. Thanks for listening, and keep reading.